So we are going to start Perek Bet in Hilchot Deah. It's good to be back. I'll tell you a quick story that I read on the internet. There's this guy, and he's driving down a city street, and he's in a Jag, okay? Which, Jaguar. That's still a respectable car, right? Okay, if you know what that is, that's like way up there on the upper end of the market scale. I don't know any high school rebbeim who own Jaguars, okay? And very expensive car, like an $80,000, $90,000 car at least. And he's flying down this city street, but he's keeping his eye out for like kids who could dart out from the trap, whatever. And he notices something in between two cars, and so he hits the brake, right? And he expects like maybe a kid will come running out, and instead a brick comes sailing out between two cars and slams into the side of his Jaguar. Now, if you're driving a Jaguar, and he sees, like, out of the corner of his eye, a kid. Can you imagine some kid just threw a brick at your Jaguar on a city street where you can stop? Not too bright. So he hits his brakes, reverses back up, gets out of the car, sees this kid, and starts screaming at him, like, what the blank is the matter with you? You throw a brick, why'd you, that's going to cost you, that brick. Like, you throw a brick and my groves over, and he grabs the kid, right? And the kid is, like, all white, turns white, and he says, really, I'm sorry, mister, whatever, and he starts crying. He says, I just didn't know what else to do. Nobody would stop for me. I had to get somebody's attention. My brother fell out of his wheelchair. And he's too heavy for me. I can't get him back into his wheelchair. And nobody would stop. So this guy, like, you know, he just melts. He just feels like, ugh. You know, like he was yelling at this kid. And he sees all of a sudden the wheelchair. And he sees this guy on the floor. So he feels terrible. So he helps the boy back into his wheelchair. And he has a few scrapes and bruises. And he sees he's okay. And he apologizes profusely, can I help you? And the kid says, no, it's okay, thank you so much for stopping, I really apologize about that, whatever. No, no problem, the kid goes off. Guy stands there for a minute looking at the brick, at the bang in the side of his Jaguar. And he decides not to fix it. And he decides that every day when he gets into his car, he's going to take a look at that dent, right? And think about how in life sometimes you go so fast, right? It shouldn't take a brick to make you see the world and realize that things are not what they seem. Okay? One of the biggest challenges that we have is our perception. We look at things and we think we know what we're looking at. If we really knew that we didn't know what we were looking at, it would change your life. Right? How do you do that? This is what we're going to get into now. Because all of this stuff, I want you to know that at the root of all the character flaws, all the struggles we have, all the, you know, like I meet people. I was talking to somebody who's in the middle of this big bruch, like whatever this. He's a taxi driver that I regularly take to the airport, and he had this taxi driver who worked for him, and the guy like ended up like leaving, you know, sort of to go out on his own after 2 years, and he's been taking away some of his customers, and he thinks it's disgusting. The guy has this big bruch. They won't talk to each other, whatever. I said to him, like, you got to sit down with the guy, you know, like I'm giving him, you know, therapy on the way to the airport. You got to sit down with the guy, like there's something going on. He's a basically good guy, like you got to talk to him, you got to. And I realized he's just looking at the world and seeing the picture that he sees. And he's sure, because look, you see it, right? So if you see the picture, nothing is, right, seeing is believing. Once you see something, you know. But that's not true. In fact, sometimes when you see things, it's precisely because you see them that it prevents you from really knowing. Right? And that's what we're going to get into. Right? I'm angry at something because I've got a perception. If I could really know the truth, the root of what I'm looking at, I wouldn't be angry. That's a general rule. Okay? So, take a look at this Rambam. Perek Bet. This is an unbelievable allegory that the Rambam uses. And I want you to know, this is one of those little pieces that's worth keeping in your head. Okay? Choli haguf. There's a sickness of the body. It's a strange thing, right? We're going to get into character development and midot and whatever. Choli aguf, okay. Choli aguf tuamim amar matok v'matok mar. There's a sickness of the body where a person tastes things that are bitter and thinks they're sweet. And he tastes things that are sweet and think they're bitter. This is actually an actual malady. And you can look this up on the internet. Where people actually, there are two types of illnesses, by the way, that this describes. One is a psychological illness, where people want to eat things that are unhealthy, even eating feces. This is an actual disease, that you want sour milk and you want things that are off, right? It's sickness, and you think that they taste good. And the things that taste good, you think taste sour. And there's also an illness that has to do with the taste buds, whatever, don't really understand it, but apparently it exists, okay? V'yesh min acholim mi shemitaveh v'taev l'machalot she'enan ruin l'achila. There are people, now remember, the Rambam, shalom aleichem, the Rambam is not just, the Rambam is not just writing this as like a rabbi. The Rambam was a doctor. And he wasn't just a doctor. He was one of the doctors. Shalom aleichem. He was one of the doctors. And no, it's not a bother, right? The Rambam, pardon? Yeah, you want, sure. Where is the hiccup? Anybody else need one? Oops. Anybody else need one? No. Right? The Rambam was a doctor, and he wasn't just a doctor. He was like the doctor. He was the doctor of the local caliph. He was world famous. I've read biographies of the Rambam. The son of the Rambam actually writes Ptakim, and they're part of one of the biographies. Apparently, there was a line. He would see people in the community for free, and there were lines around the block. And you can read certain sections. When we get to Perek Daled, we're going to breeze through that. But it's clear the Rambam had a very, very deep understanding. He was a genius of the body and illnesses and, you know, whatever was prevalent in his day. I met a fellow who's a world-renowned radiologist in Pittsburgh a number of years ago, and he has a letter that the Rambam wrote to doctors that's up on his his office next to the MRI machines. And he told me that he's read things that the Rambam wrote that are brilliant, that are still true today, 800-900 years later. So I guess he knows what he's talking about. He says that there are sick people who actually yearn, they thirst, they desire to eat things that are unhealthy, right? Guy wants to eat sour milk. Guy wants to eat mold. Guy wants to eat feces. What do you do with a guy like that? Something off, right? Pardon? It's a real disease. I don't know if it's a psychological disease. I imagine it's psychological, right?
He's at a very far extreme.
Very far extreme. Which is, by the way, a very good point.
But he's alluding to something else that people have.
We'll get there in a second, but I want you to remember that. This is a very far extreme. You will find that what the Rambam does in Hilchot Deot, he takes you to the extreme. One of the ways to measure, to figure out how to deal with something, is to see the extreme. When you see the extreme, right? You know, Rav Tversky once told me, don't forget your thought. Rav Tversky once told me that sometimes, like in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, sometimes a guy has to hit rock bottom before he can climb his way up. And if a guy is on his way down and you prevent him, it's called a codependent, and you prevent him, you're trying to help him, and you prevent him from hitting rock bottom, you're actually preventing him arriving at the point where he can begin to climb back up. Now, that's a very dangerous process because not everybody who hits rock bottom climbs their way back up. I mean, you can hit rock bottom and never get out. People commit suicide. People do terrible things. It's a very difficult, difficult question. But there's a general rule with addictions in general and these types of illnesses. You can't be the codependent for a person. You know, if someone is, I don't know, what's a good example? Drugs is a good example. You know, marijuana is a good example. Marijuana is generally accepted as a stepping stone drug. The statistics on how many people start by trying it, then they do it regularly, and they think that it's not addictive because there's no detox. Do you know what detox is? Right? Everybody here know what detox is, right? Right. Detox is like if you're on heroin, God forbid, and you want to go off heroin cold turkey, you could die because the body craves it, and the physiological reaction of the body to all of a sudden going off heroin or cocaine can be very severe. You can have muscle reactions that can kill you, right? Your heart can stop, all sorts of things. So when they take you to a clinic, they actually give you heroin, but they do it, or methadone. They give it on sort of lower and lower rates, kind of like penicillin, right? You don't have to do that for pot, for hash, for whatever. If you go off marijuana, you don't need detox. So for many years, they thought it's because it's not an addictive substance. It's not true. What happens is that marijuana is fat-soluble, which means it gets stored in the fat system in the body. And actually, you will be going through detox. You'll just go through it with the body. You can be high. If you take, like, a reefer today, I don't know if you know this, a reefer today, they stack the odds. And basically, they being the people who create this stuff and supply it and grow it and whatever, they want people to be addicted. So a reefer today, or a joint, is about 15 times as potent as it was in the 60s. In other words, if you smoke one reefer, it's like you smoked 15 joints from 1965. And that's why people get addicted to it very, very, very quickly. And if somebody, I once had a student years and years ago who had a freak-out attack because he was doing this stuff in high school. He came here, he wanted to go off it, and he was like in October, November, and he realizes he was still having experiences of being high, and he wasn't taking it. And so he was afraid that he had brain damage. He freaked out, right? So I called up Rav Tursky because I'm not an expert on the topic. And I begged Rav Tursky to see him, and he couldn't, and whatever. He was busy. He had to go pick up his dad from the airport. So I said, I'll make you a deal. I'll drive you to the airport. And you talk to this boy in the back seat while I drive you to the airport. So he thought that was a great deal. So, of course, I got to listen in, which was awesome, because he's really the master. He has a whole clinic. Do you know where Rav Tursky is? He has a clinic for chemical dependency in Pittsburgh called Gateways. He's an amazing person. Rav Tursky was slated to be basically the next Baba Rebbe. And when he was, 1920, so he felt that people were not bringing their stuff to the Rebbe. They were bringing it to the psychiatrist. So he did what you didn't do in that world. I mean, beard, kapata, the whole nine yards. And he went to medical school. He became a psychiatrist. And he opened up a clinic. And he treats thousands and thousands of people. In fact, his name is Shia Tursky. His followers, people who sort of he helps, become so devoted to him, they become like his chassidim, they call them Shiites, you know? Many of them are not Jewish. He doesn't obviously limit just to Jews. And he's really an expert on the field. And if you're curious, I mean, you can look him up on the web. He's written some amazing Sfarim and Torah. But anyway, so he was telling me a lot of this stuff, and I learned a lot from him afterwards. So basically what happens is you have to take yourself off it gradually. And when do you realize you've got an issue, unfortunately? Like people who are wise, they realize the issue quickly, you know? But not everybody's wise, and nobody gets it, and it's a human experience that you don't get things until you get into big trouble, right? Like if you're speeding. If you're driving down the highway at 110 miles an hour, you're speeding. And you're risking people's lives, and you're risking your own life, but you don't necessarily realize it because it's an empty road. And you're not in an extreme. You're on your way to the airport. It's 2:30 in the morning. There's nobody on the road. It's a three-lane highway. And you're driving 110 miles an hour. It's not too bright, but it's not super stupid. When do you realize that you're a speeder and you need to work on it? God forbid. When you can't stop the car and you crash into a pole and you kill somebody. Like, that's an extreme. Somebody who's really done that and gets it, he'll drive like... I had a serious car accident that I once told you about when I was in 1995. And I fell asleep at the wheel, basically. And that was an extreme. I had come back from the States, and I wanted to reconnect with the guys. And I was with them on a mishmar on Thursday night until 3:34 in the morning. I was driving home at 4 in the morning because I was an idiot. It was an extreme. It's off. It's off to be that tired and be driving. So I won't do that. I'll be, tomorrow night I have my niece's bat mitzvah, so tonight we'll be doing the parashah shiur and the mishmar. You won't find me here at midnight tonight, like even though I want to connect with the guys because that's the way you learn the hard way. Every time I get behind the wheel, I take myself back to that minute and I drive like a grandmother. People honk me, behind. I'm the guy who just drives in the right lane, takes it easy. It's just not worth it. But I had to get to an extreme to realize that. If you're smart, you don't. So the Rambam will take you to the extreme in order to show you what the extreme is, but that's not the ideal. You wanted to say something, Ari? No? Good? Right? So he says, okay, so this guy, right, he wants foods that are unhealthy for him. Kigon hafar, like dirt, the pecham or coal, visonea machalot atovim, kigon apatva basar, kolafi ravacholi, and he doesn't want, he can't stand real food. You know what to do with a person like this. Kach, so too, because he's just using this as an allegory, bnei adam shenafshotehem cholot, people whose nishamot are sick, people who are imbalanced, right? Mitavim v'oavim adeot haraot, they love those character development, those traits, right? They thrive on things that are bad. V'sonim aderech hatova, and they hate the good way. They don't want to be doing what's really healthy for their neshama. Umit atzlim lalechet ba, and they're lazy to walk in that path, right? V'hi kveda aleim lima'od lefi chol yam, and it's hard, it's difficult for them. Like, even now, we're 3 months into this year, right? So I imagine that on some level, some of you have gotten to the point where you recognize that when you're here and you can get into the zone and you can learn and you grow, that's just good for you. Like, have you had a day or an afternoon or a class or a discussion or a chavruta where you walk away thinking, this is what I came for. This is awesome. Have you had that experience at least once? Right? So you know somewhere in the back of your mind that if you could do that consistently, 3 siddurim a day, you'd have an unbelievable experience. Like, you recognize that. But you want other things, And I'm not, I'm not doing this to give Musar Chas V'Shalom. I'm just saying, like, you recognize in the back of your mind that some of the things that you want, they're not necessarily the most healthy things for you, but you want them. So the Rambam says, that's a choli. That's an imbalance. And we're affected by society and other things. And the hardest thing is to recognize that that's an imbalance. It's a very hard thing. V'chin Yishayahu Omer, and Yishayahu says, V'anashim Halalu. Right? Haveya omrim larato v'latov ra. These are people who say to good bad and to bad good. Right? And bad is not, I'm not talking about the extremes. Like, obviously, there are things that are so extreme that most people don't recognize their extremes. Right? But sometimes it's the things, like when you look back, like I look back, when I was in high school, I was a sports fanatic. I spent hours and hours and hours watching sports. I loved it, right? And I even convinced myself that it was great and it was good and it was a productive experience. And some of them were. Like, we would go every few weeks, we would go to the Mets game on Sunday afternoon. My mother is English. And she would make this big, like a big cooler thing of like hot dogs and hamburgers, whatever, because back then you couldn't get kosher dogs and burgers in the stadium. And she would bring this whole thing, we'd heft it in, and, you know, everybody was jealous because we would like break out, you know, sort of dogs and burgers and we didn't have to go to the whatever. And my mother was determined that we shouldn't feel, what's the word, mikupachim, like we were missing something because we were religious. And we would watch the game, and it was this incredible experience, bonding with the family, and we would talk and whatever. And we tried for years to explain baseball to my mother. She's English. It didn't work. In fact, probably one of the most, I wouldn't call it humiliating, but one of those I'm a teenager and this is my mother moments was we were in a Mets game, and I think it was Cleon Jones hit a home run, and everybody went, right? Everybody went nuts. And my mother jumps up. She goes, touchdown! I'm like, oh, no, Mom, no. Right? But okay. But, so I'm not saying there's no, you know, there are pros and cons, whatever it is. But, like, even now, like, I'll sometimes, like, I'll veg and I'll go watch TV for a few hours. I know in my mind I could do better things with my time. But you're mitaveh for things that at the end of the day, or even, like, you're sitting at a bus stop. Sitting at a bus stop and some beautiful girl walks by to minister, right? So what does it say in Shema? It says, v'lo taturu acharil avchem v'chreinichem. Don't follow your eyes, right? So intellectually, you say to yourself, what am I going to get by following a girl wearing miniskirt? I'm not going to remember who she is. I'm not going to remember what she looks like. Is that going to give me anything lasting in my life? It's just going to impact my thought process and my mind in an unhealthy way. But, you know, but you don't think that way, right? That's what people naturally do. When you get to the space where you can actually think about that, you don't look. You train yourself not to look, right? But how do you get to that reality? So first the Rambam wants you to realize, this is how do you deal with that, right? And of them it said, people who leave true paths to follow darkness. This line is the beginning of the Rambam's journey to figuring ourselves out. You ready for this? This is unbelievable. Okay? Hey, how's it going? How do you fix this imbalance? Yelchu etzel hachamim. Shehin rufei hanefashot. You have to go to the Chacham. He's like the soul doctor. Now, I want you to know, you wouldn't really get this if you hadn't studied Perek Aleph. Okay? The first chapter was designed so that we're ready to get this. So why do you think the Rambam says that you go to the Chacham? Why doesn't he say you go to the Rav, or you go to the Tzaddik, or you go to the Chassid? Oh, so who's the Chacham? The Chacham is the one who gets being in the middle. I want you to know that one of the greatest challenges in life, and this is so worth the effort, is to find a chacham in your life. To find a chacham in your life. And to be able to be mityaetz with him. To be able to speak to him and to grow from him. And to get his advice when you feel you need to find that middle balance. That's a chacham. If you can find a person like that in your life and keep a kesher with them, that's huge. It's huge. You know, I was talking to a boy recently who's, whatever, it's a longer story, he's in a place, and he's being impacted by a rabbi who's just off balance. He's just doing things that are off balance from what this boy is telling me, you know, to the point where I think it involves physical violence. That's just off. So what does this boy do? Because that's supposed to be, that person's not a chacham. I don't know that person, I don't know him well, I don't know the story, but I can tell you, he's not a chacham. And I said to him, you need to find chokhmah. You need to find a role model who you believe is healthy and balanced and finds that middle path, right? And if you can find that person can help you find the middle path. It's interesting. The Rambam doesn't say, study this or study that. Like, what does it say? It says, Aselach HaRav. You have to find these role models in your life. In fact, I think, and you could definitely debate this, that one of the goals for a guy in yeshiva, right, is actually to see if he can find that. Like, there's certain rabbanim, you know, I'm actually struggling with this whole question that I was mentioning before, and I'm not sure what to do about it, and I was debating going to talk to Rav Nevensal or Rav Amital, and I, you know, unless I have a halachic question that I feel like I need someone bigger than me to be able to answer, this type of a question, I don't remember the last time. It's been years since I needed to ask somebody a question. And this question is so significant that I feel like I have to go to ask Rav Amital. Rav Amital, unfortunately, was just had a heart attack and he's recovering at home, so I don't want to bother him. But I have someone. Like there's, I have a go-to person. There are three or four Rebbeim that I'm still close with, and it's a lot of effort to keep a kesher, you know, over the years with a Rav. Because when you're learning in yeshiva, it's easy, but later on, it's a lot of work. And you see. And what's interesting is people who have a Rebbe like that, you see in their life that they have that balance. It's a very, very healthy thing. Right? Yalchu etzel hachachamim shehin rafei nefashot v'yirapu chol yam b'deot shemelamdin otan, with the character sort of traits and development that they teach them, ad sheyachzirum l'derech hatova, until they can get back to the derech hatova, which the Rambam defined as that middle path. V'hamakirim b'deot haraot. And the person who knows these negative deot, the einam holchim etzel hachachamim. Suppose, right, someone knows that he has, like, you know you're off. You know that you see things, and they're flawed, right? And you don't go to try to fix them. You don't go to work on them. You don't, whatever. Alehem amar Shlomo. Shlomo Melech said, chochma u'musar avilim bazu. Right? He said, those are the people who are abhorrent to chokhmah and musar, to wisdom and to ethics, whatever. It's a hard thing to kind of confront the imbalances in your life. It's a very hard thing. It takes work. You guys are blessed because you're 18 years old. And the implications of recognizing this is, and listen, I want you to know, if you go through 6 months in yeshiva and you don't think there's anything that you personally need to work on, you're missing something. Everyone needs to work on. I think, and notice I say I think, that I know what things I need to work on, and I'm working on them. It takes a lot of work. I don't know if you ever get there in this world. But the first stage is to recognize, what do I need to work on? What could I fix? How could I find more balance? Where could I? And one of the challenges is going to be how you do that and what steps you take, etc. And not because, you know, it's like 20 years ago, the idea of going to seek therapy was like, okay, he's the whack job. You know, you didn't go, and if you went, you didn't tell anybody, or whatever. Today, people have come to the conclusion that 99% of the world population needs some level of therapy. It'd be a healthy thing, right? So to be able to recognize that you know, the pasuk says, Tovim ha-shnayim min ha-echad, right? Two is always better than one. And it's hard to do things on your own. And so that's a process of introspection to be able to figure out what needs work and what needs fixing. Make sense, right? Any questions? No, we're good? Okay. So we finished on time. Baruch Hashem. Take a little break. Morning Seder will start in a few minutes. And it's so good to see you guys again. I would love, I mean really love to...